What you doing?
Designing my new 2021 Nissan Kicks online in the Kicks Color Studio. I give each a special name. This one's electric blue, orange, red, white. I call it the gumball machine. You think it's me?
I feel like you're more of a red velvet guy.
Limitless possibilities. With over 100 million available color combinations and Bose Personal Plus system in the boldly new 2021 Nissan Kicks. Bose is the registered trademark of the Bose Corporation. Color combinations include interior and exterior colors. Customization is an available feature subject to availability at participating Nissan dealers. See dealer for details.
Call 1-888-FARMERS to switch and you could save an average of $470 on your auto insurance. That's a lot of money in just a few minutes. With savings like that, you could be lounging on an impractical amount of ornate and overpriced throw pillows you bought for your couch. But you won't, because you're better with money than that. That's why you're calling us in the first place. Call 1-888-FARMERS to get a quote today.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Based on average nationwide annual savings survey data, July to December 2020, underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
Aloha, everybody. This is Kathy Bilski, the Quantum Leaf Let Light Unite show on UPRN Radio. This is February 26, 2021, and how are y'all doing? Well, I don't know about you, but we are out of Mercury in retrograde. Yay. And that was really interesting, and I'm really glad it's over. And, you know, just when you think you're out of retrograde, boom, we get hit with the full moon. And I have to say, I've had quite a few people call me up in the past couple of days where, you know, their partner or somebody in the family has gone crazy. And I have to remind them, it's the full moon time. It's a time where your emotions go wacko and you're super sensitive. So you really got to watch your words and how you react. And for some reason, it's been an interesting retrograde. And yesterday, you're really tired. It's at the end of the day, you know, after you've eaten a nice meal and you're sitting at the computer and you think you're doing work and then you wake up 2 hours later. Yeah, I said I fell asleep for a couple hours, so I knew I was tired. So I took today off. And I ended up dealing with kids, my kids. Oh, yeah, family's a hoot. And I do want to give a shout out to Andrew Wiltsy, who just won a jiu-jitsu championship tonight. And it's on Flow Grapple. So proud of him. That's my boy. So tonight, I thought we would take a little stroll down history lane. And it's often said that if you don't want to repeat history, it's really good to know it. So one of the things we're going to talk about is the history of the pharma cartel. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to jump to World War II. And, you know, what has happened to some of those Nazi kids? Yeah, now the Nazis at the end of World War II and during the war, they ended up with a lot of loot. They killed a lot of Jewish people and other people that had money. And even if you didn't have money, whatever you had, they took it. Now, after the war, what happened to it? Well, we're going to find out how some of that money actually went to some of those Nazi children. And you know, guys, if you really pay attention to what's going on in the planet, Nazis are generational. This is something that you are taught, unless you're like Stephen Miller. And I swear to God that I don't even want to call him a man, a reptilian. He reincarnated as a Nazi. Because that was he was such a Nazi in World War II, whatever he was, he came back as a Nazi. And he grew up like that. It was an inherent part of his being. And then, after World War II, to segue back to World War II, a lot of Nazis escaped and came over to the United States through Operation Paperclip. And that's where the Catholic Church helped them escape to the United States, South America, Antarctica, you know, wherever they needed protection, where they would be safe. And the United States literally took up all the Nazi scientists and they put them in universities and other places like that, NASA, the CIA, and they protected them. Why? Because they wanted their knowledge. And we actually had a lot of people at that time. If you, again, go back to World War II, a lot of the industrialists supported Hitler and they were into eugenics. You know, one of the big supporters of Hitler was Henry Ford. Now, I come from Michigan. I actually come from Dearborn, Michigan, the hometown of Henry Ford. And when I grew up, it was really, really racist. It was so racist in that town that if you were black and tried to walk through it, the police knew you didn't live there. And they would literally pick you up and take you to the border, the Detroit border. Oh, yeah. I mean, old European. But to get back to Henry Ford, what does it say about a man who Adolf Hitler has only one picture on his wall, and it's of Henry Ford? Oh, yeah, they were buds, okay? And actually, there's a lot of manufacturers and very wealthy people that supported Hitler. And George Bush Sr., his father, grandfather, supported Hitler to where they literally, after the war, took away his company for collaboration. Of course, he was giving it back, but I'm just saying, you know, these guys supported the Nazi theories and eugenics. Now, what is eugenics? It's quelling the population of people you don't think should live. And yeah, the Nazis always talked about the master race, which they thought they were the master race and everybody else wasn't. But the Nazis did everything they could to get rid of the people who they deemed wasn't worthy enough to be alive. And they didn't want them to so-called breed. And that includes anybody who had any kind of health problems, and even old people. You know, no need. I have to say, you know, what's going on with this COVID thing? Who are they making sure gets an experimental vaccine? If it's not for the old people and the people that are really sick. So anyway, we'll just step back and see what happens with that. Time will tell if people are having reactions and if people die from it. And if you really want to know more about that and keep up with it, Robert Kennedy Jr., who is one of my heroes, is really on it. And he talks about the COVID vaccines, 5G, all that stuff. You know, he calls it the Children's Defense Fund. Yeah, great guy. You know, look him up. You know, get involved. When he was censored on Instagram, I went, oh my God, he's censored for speaking truth, of course, about Bill Gates and everything he was doing and technocracy. And they censored him. And then I went and I looked him up and I donated to his cause and I volunteered and I said, guys, if you need me, I am here. So anyway, you know, it's good to pay attention to history. And hopefully if we know history, we won't repeat it. All right, so let's talk about the history of the pharma cartel. Now we're going to go all the way back to 1911, May 15th. Now the Supreme Court of the U.S. finds John Rockefeller and his trust guilty of corruption, illegal business practices, and racketeering. As a result of this decision, the entire Rockefeller Standard Oil Trust, the world's largest corporation of its time, was sentenced to be dismantled. But Rockefeller was already above the Supreme Court and didn't care about that decision. So we're going to jump to 1913. In order to disperse public and political pressure on him and the other robber barons, Rockefeller uses a trick called philanthropy, whereby the illegal gains from his robber practices in the oil business are used to launch the Rockefeller Foundation. Now, this tax haven was used to strategically take over the healthcare sector of the U.S. The Rockefeller Foundation was the front organization for a new global business venture of Rockefeller and his accomplices. The new venture was called Pharmaceutical Investment Business. Donations from the Rockefeller Foundation went only to medical schools and hospitals. These institutions had become missionaries of a new breed of companies, the manufacturers of patent synthetic drugs. This was also the time when the first vitamins were discovered. It soon became clear, however, that these natural molecules had life-saving health benefits and that they were able to prevent many chronic health conditions. The first molecule books appeared with research subsequently abandoned about the health benefits of vitamins. These newly discovered molecules had only one disadvantage. They were not patentable. Thus, in its first years of existence, the pharmaceutical investment business already faced a mortal threat. Vitamins and other micronutrients promoted as public health programs would prohibit the development of any sizable investment business based on patent and drugs. The elimination of this unwanted competition from natural micronutrients, therefore, became a question of life and death for the pharmaceutical business. Now we're going to jump ahead 5 years to 1918. The Rockefeller Foundation uses the Spanish flu epidemic and the media that it already controlled by this time to start a witch hunt on all forms of medicine that were not covered by its patents. Within the next 15 years, all medical schools in the U.S., most hospitals, and the American Medical Association all essentially became pawns on the chessboard of Rockefeller's strategy to subjugate the entire healthcare sector under the monopoly of his pharmaceutical investment business. Disguised as a Mother Teresa, the Rockefeller Foundation was also used to conquer foreign countries and entire continents for the pharmaceutical investment business, just as Rockefeller himself had done a few decades previously with his petrochemical investment business. Now we're going to go to 1925. On the other side of the Atlantic in Germany, the first chemical pharmaceutical cartel is founded in order to compete with Rockefeller's quest for control of the global market. Led by the German multinationals, Bayer, BASF, and Hoechst, and the IG Farben cartel was found with a total number of employees surpassing 80,000. The race for global control was on. So now we're going to go to November 29th, 1929. The Rockefeller Cartel USA and the IG Farben Cartel Germany decided to divide the entire globe into interest spheres. The very same crime Rockefeller had been sentenced for 18 years earlier when his trust had divided up the U.S. into interest zones. 1932 to 1933. IG Farben cartel, equally insatiable, decides no longer to be bound by the 1929 constraints. They supported an uprising German politician who promises IG Farben to military conquer the world with them. With millions of dollars in election campaign donations, this political power sees German, this politician sees power in Germany, turned the German democracy into a dictatorship, and kept his promise to launch his conquest war, a war that soon became known as World War II. In each and every country, Hitler's Wehrmacht invaded. The first act was to rob the chemical, petrochemical, and pharmaceutical industries and assign them, free of charge, to the IG Farben Empire. So let's skip to 1942-45. In order to cement its global leadership with patent drugs, the IG Farben cartel tests its patent pharmaceutical substances on concentration camp inmates in Auschwitz, Dachau, and many other sites. The fees for conducting these inhuman studies were transferred directly from the bank accounts of Bayer, Heusch, and Bass to the bank accounts of the SS, who operated the concentration camps. 1945, IG Farben's plan to take control of the global oil and drug markets have failed. The U.S. and the other Allied forces won World War II. Nevertheless, many U.S. and Allied soldiers had lost their lives during the conflict, and the Allies' reward was little compared to the rewards of others. The corporate share of the losers, IG Farben, went to the Rockefeller Trust, USA, and Rothschild, J.P. Morgan, in the U.K. So now we skip to 1947. In the Nuremberg War Crimes Tribunal, 25 managers from Bayer, Bass, Heusch, and other executives of the IG Farben cartel were tried for crimes against humanity. These crimes included leading wars of aggression, instituting slavery, and committing mass murder. In his final pleading, U.S. Chief Prosecutor Cuter, Telford Taylor summarizes the crimes committed by these corporate criminals with the following words: without IG Farben, the Second World War would not have been possible. Amazingly, the real culprits for the death of 60 million people in World War II, the IG Farben executives received the mildest verdicts. Even those executives directly responsible for the crimes in IG Auschwitz only received a maximum of 12 years in jail. Surprised? You shouldn't be. By 1944, Nelson Rockefeller had already entered the executive branch of the U.S. government. He started off as an undersecretary of state and ended up a few years later as special advisor of President Truman for special affairs. In other words, at critical conjunctures of the 20th century, the Rockefeller interests took direct charge. They decided the post-war shape of the world and the distribution of its wealth. As such, under the influence of the U.S. State Department, the verdicts in Nuremberg against the IG Farben managers can easily be explained. In return for taking over the corporate shares of IG Farben and thereby globally control of the oil and drug business, Nelson Rockefeller made sure that the real culprits of World War II were not hanged. In fact, as we shall see, they were needed. We're going to jump to 1949. The Federal Republic of Germany was founded. This was the first time in history that the constitution and society of an industrialized nation could be planned and modeled as a fortress of the pharmaceutical investment business, a transatlantic outpost of the Rockefeller interests. Within a few years, the IG Farben managers sentenced in Nuremberg were released from jail and put back into their previous positions as stakeholders of the Rockefeller interests. Fritz Thiermeier, for example, sentenced to 12 years in jail for his crimes in Auschwitz, was back as chairman of the board of Germany's largest pharmaceutical multinational, Bayer, by 1963. So we're going to go to 1945 through 49. The role of the Rockefeller brothers was not limited to their taking over the global monopolies of the oil and drug business. They also needed to create the political framework for these businesses to thrive. Under their influence, therefore, the United Nations was founded in 1945 in San Francisco to seize political control of the post-war world. Three countries, leading drug export nations, had all the say, and 200 other nations were rendered mere spectators. Founded as organizations to allegedly serve the well-being of the people of the world, UN subsidiary organizations, such as the World Health Organization, WHO, World Trade Organization, WTO, soon turned out to be nothing more than a political arms of the global oil and drug interests. Of course, on behalf of the Rockefeller interests, the government of the pharmaceutical banana republic at Germany spearheaded one of the most infamous efforts ever made with the United Nations. Under the pretense of consumer protection, it launched a 4-decade-long crusade to outlaw vitamin therapies and other natural, non-patentable health approaches in all member countries of the United Nations. The goal was simply to ban any and all competition for the multi-billion dollar business with patented drugs. The plan was simple: copy for the entire world what had already been accomplished in America in the 1920s, a monopoly on healthcare for the investment business with patent drugs. Since the marketplace for the pharmaceutical investment business depends upon the continued existence of diseases, the drugs it developed were not intended to prevent, cure, or eradicate disease. Thus, the goal of the global strategy was to monopolize health for billions of people with pills that nearly cover symptoms but hardly ever address the root cause of the disease, the deprivation of billions of people from having access to life-saving information about the health benefits of natural health approaches, whilst at the same time establishing a monopoly with largely ineffective and frequently toxic patent drugs cause disease, death, and genocidal proportions. This epidemic of unnecessary disability and death by the pharmaceutical business with disease is unparalleled in history. Linus Pauling and other eminent scientists deserve credit for having kept open the door of knowledge about the health benefits of vitamins and other effective natural health approaches. If it were not for them, we would already be living in a health prison today, guarded by the gatekeepers of the pharmaceutical business with disease in medicine, politics, and the media. What's going on today, guys? Linus Pauling should also be credited for having identified the significance of Dr. Rath's early research in vitamins in cardiovascular disease, and for having invited Dr. Rath to join him during his last years to continue his life works. And then we skip to 1990 and 92. Now, these years will go down in history as the beginning of the end of the pharmaceutical business with disease. And a series of scientific publications, in some of which Dr. Rath invited Linus Pauling to join him as co-author, Dr. Rath identified micronutrient deficiency as a primary cause of disease. These diseases include heart attacks, high blood pressure, diabetic, circulatory problems, cancer, and even immune deficiency diseases, including AIDS. Like a Sherlock Holmes of science, Dr. Rath traced the real cause of these diseases and found that they had been deliberately nebulized or even hidden away from millions of people for only one purpose only, to feed the insatiable greed of the pharmaceutical business with disease. So what's going on now, guys, with this COVID thing? And they're trying to push out this experimental vaccine, to which all the drug manufacturers are not liable for any side effects. It hasn't been tested long enough. And now anybody who gets the shot is part of their guinea pig program. You don't know what's going to happen down the road. And guys, I mean, you know, everybody goes, wahoo, shots are it. Bill Gates brought back polio to Africa with his vaccine. And what about Gardasil, where they're trying to get little girls to take it? And that made them sterile. And it goes on and on. And they hide the side effects. And they want to tell you, oh, no, no side effects from any vaccine. Unless, true. And then you go to the pharmaceuticals and, you know, the ones that are advertising. And they can advertise stuff that kills you as long as they are upfront and tell you about it. I mean, that is just reptilian, sick, and twisted. I mean, my grandma, and I'll granted I'm 67, but my grandma didn't go to the pharmacy and say, oh my God, please give me the medication, you know, the one with all the side effects and the one, you know, the side effects that'll kill me. Oh, that will be fun. She used herbs. And truthfully, if you understand energy and vibration, stones are put here also on this planet to help us heal. It's a science. Every stone has energy and vibration. And if you get the energy and vibration, now you have a tool. So if you were out of body and you were really stressed out, I would say, here, hold some hematite. That would calm you down. If you needed special healing, you had a health issue, I would guide you to the angel light. I've had that get rid of burns and bruises overnight and heal cancers and tumors and cysts. And when I broke my little finger, I made a splint out of Band-Aids and angel light, and I healed it in 3.5 weeks. It's an amazing stone. If you wanted to be creative, I would guide you to amethyst. It opens up the right side of your brain. You wanted more protection, I would guide you to black tourmaline. It helps you not take on other people's negativity. Meteorite, moldavite. It takes all your old patterns, scrambles them and opens you up to new possibilities. And that stones, for those of you that are awake and aware, they are tools. For those of you that aren't, they're just rocks. No problem. All right, moving along. Now, we were talking about Nazis and concentration camps, and I wanted to introduce you to a old woman that actually passed away, and her name was Lynn Kalita Hausch, H-A-U-S-C-H. Her name, oops, sorry, that was the woman that wrote this. Whoops. Her name is Irene Semler, and she was a devout Catholic. She died May 12, 2008, at age 98 in Warsaw, Poland. Now, during World War II, Irina got permission to work in the Warsaw Ghetto. God, gutsy woman, as a plumbing sewer specialist. Now, she had an ulterior motive. She knew what the Nazi plans were for the Jews, being German. Irina smuggled infants out in the bottom of the toolbox she carried. And she carried in the back of her truck a burlap sack for the larger children. She also had a dog in the back that she trained to bark when the Nazi soldiers let her in and out of the ghetto. The soldiers, of course, wanted nothing to do with the dog, and the barking covered the infant's noises. During her time of doing this, she managed to smuggle out and save 2,500 children and infants. She was caught, and the Nazis broke both her legs, arms, and beat her severely. Irina kept a record of the names of all the kids she smuggled out and kept them in a glass jar buried under a tree in her backyard. After the war, she tried to locate any parents that may have survived and reunited the family. Most had been gassed. Those children she helped got placed into foster family homes or adopted. Last year, Irina was up for the Nobel Peace Prize. She was not selected. President Obama won one year before becoming president for his work as a community organizer for ACORN. Al Gore won also for a slideshow on global warming. In memoriam, 63 years later, we're doing our small part by posting this message. It's now more than 60 years after the Second World War in Europe ended. And this posting that I'm reading has a memorial chain. In memory of the 6 million Jews, 20 million Russians, 10 million Christians, and 1,900 Catholic priests who were murdered, massacred, raped, burned, starved, and humiliated. Now more than ever with Iran and others claiming the Holocaust to be a myth, it's imperative to make sure the world never forgets, because there are others who would like to do it again. So if anybody wants a copy of this, you can just write me on Facebook or my YouTube page, and I'll be more than happy. So you can pass it around. Oh my God, it brings tears to my eyes. Oh, sorry. I'm just human, and it touches my heart to know during World War II, a woman purposely put herself in the ghetto to help. I mean, that's divine service. It's just amazing. Could you do it? Would you do it? Would you even think about doing and not think about the consequences? Wow. All right, well, let's move on, or I'm just going to be crying my eyes out over that one. And yes, tears are falling down my cheeks. And, you know, I'm sorry, guys, I didn't do visual this week. I took a day off, and I didn't even get out of my pajamas. So, you know, I'm not doing visual. You can't even imagine what I look like. I mean, if I look like this around Halloween, I would scare you all to death, okay? All right. So let's talk about what happened to all that Nazi money. Now, Nazi Goebbels' descendants are actually hidden billionaires. Now, the Nazi propaganda minister heirs own nearly 50% of BMW. The Quandt family fortune partially built by concentration camp labor. Quandt was released from captivity in 1947. 7 years later, he and his half-brother Herbert, Harold, was the only remaining child from Magda Goebbels' first marriage, and would inherit the industry empire built by their father, Günther Quandt. The brother took the business, which had produced Mauser firearms and anti-aircraft missiles for the Third Reich's war machine. Their most valuable assets became stakes in car manufacturers, Bayerisch Motoren Werk AG, BMW, Daimler AG, and they had a lower profile. While their half-brothers passed away decades ago, their legacy has endured. Herbert's widow, Johanna Quandt, 86, and their children, Susan Clanton and Stefan Quandt, have remained in the public's eye as BMW's dominant shareholders. The billionaire daughters of Harold Quandt, Katharina Geller Herr, 61, Gabriel Quandt, 60, Annette Angelica Mathies, 58, and 51-year-old Kalina Bettina Rosenblatt Moe, have kept a lower profile. The four sisters inherited about 1.5 billion Deutschmark, which is about 760 million US dollars, after the death of their mother, Inge, in 1987, according to the family sanctioned biography, Die Quants. They managed their wealth through the Harold Quandt Holding Company, a Bad Homburg, Germany-based family investment company and trust named after their father, Dr. Fritz Becker, the CEO of the family entities, said the siblings realized average annual returns above 7% from its founding in 1981 through 1996. Since then, returns have averaged 7.6%. Oh. The family wants to stay private, and that is an acceptable situation for me, said Becker in an interview at his Bad Homburg office. We invest our money globally, and if it's $1 billion, $500 million, or $3 billion, who cares? Together, the four sisters and the two children of a deceased sibling share a fortune worth at least $6 billion. Giving each of them a net worth of $1.2 billion, according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index. They have never appeared individually as billionaires on an international wealth ranking. Becker declined to provide the exact figure the holding manages for the four sisters. The siblings declined to comment for this account. A spokesman for the family investment company, in an email, he said the net worth calculation was too high, declining to be more specific. Becker declined to provide the exact figure, the holding managers for the Soar Sisters. The siblings declined to comment for this account. The rise of the Quant family fortune remains the same trajectory. As Germany's quest for global domination in the 21st century, it began in 1883 when Emil Quant acquired a textile company owned by his late father-in-law. At the turn of the century, Emil passed the business to his eldest son, Gunther. The younger Quant saw an opportunity with the onset of war in 1914. His factory is already one of the biggest clothing manufacturers for the German state, quadrupled their weekly uniform production for the army. After Germany's surrender 4 years later, Quant put the company's wartime profits to use. In 1922, he bought a majority stake in the Accumulatorium Fabric AG, a Hagen-based battery manufacturer. 6 years later, he took over Berlin Karlsruhe Industrial Werken, Well, they made sewing machines and silverware. The factory, once one of the Germans' largest weapon producers, had been forced to retool as part of the country's disarmament agreement. So in 1918, Gunther's Quant's first wife died of the Spanish flu, leaving him a widower with two young sons, Helmut and Herbert. He remarried Magda Richel in 1921, and the couple's only son, Harald, was born later that year. Helmut died in 1927 from complications related to appendicitis. Quant and Magda divorced in 1929. 2 years later, she married Joseph Goebbels, a member of the German parliament, who also held a doctorate degree in drama and served as head of the propaganda for Germany's growing Nazi party. After the Nazis took power in 1933, their leader, Adolf Hitler, appointed Goebbels as the Third Reich's propaganda minister. Gunther Quant joined the party that same year. His factories became key suppliers to the German war effort, even though his relationship with Goebbels had become increasingly strained. There was constant rivalry, said Bonn-based history professor Joachim Schulzek, author of a family commission study of their involvement with the Third Reich. In a telephone interview, it didn't matter that Goebbels didn't like him. It didn't have any influence on Quant's ability to make money. In 1937, he earned the title of Wirtschaftsführer, the name given to members of an elite group of businessmen who were deemed beneficial to the production of war materials for the Third Reich. During the war, Quant's AFA manufactured batteries for U-boat submarines and V-2 rocket launchers. His BKIW, which had been renamed Deutsche Waffen und Munitionsfabriken AG in 1936, produced Mauser firearms, ammunition, and anti-aircraft missiles. He was one of the leading industrialists of the Third Reich and the Second World War. He always kept a very low profile. From 1940 to 1945, the Quant family factories were staffed with more than 50,000 forced civilian laborers, prisoners of war, and concentration camp workers. According to Schulze-Sachs, 1,183-page study. The report was commissioned by the family in 2007 after German television aired the documentary The Silence of the Quants, a critical look at their wartime activities. Ouch. Released in September 2011, the study also found the quant appropriated assets from Jewish company owners and that his son Herbert had planned building an AFA factory in which slave laborers would be deployed. Günter Quandt didn't have a Nazi kind of thinking, said Jungbluth, the family biographer, who was looking for an opportunity to expand his personal empire. Quandt's youngest son, Harold, lived with his mother, Goebbels, and six half-siblings. In 1939, he joined the German army after the country's invasion of Poland, volunteering for the army's paratrooper unit 1 year later. During war, Harold was deployed in Greece, France, and Russia before being shot and captured in Italy in 1944 and taken to the British Army-run POW camp in Benghazi, where he received his mother's farewell letter. His stepfather also sent him a goodbye note. It's likely that you'll be the only one to remain who can continue the tradition of our family, wrote Goebbels, who served the Chancellor of Germany for one day following Hitler's suicide, April 30th, 1945. I don't believe Hitler committed suicide. After the war, Günter Quandt served in an internment camp in Moosburg on der Isar for more than a year before being judged. Miltefeuer, a Nazi follower who wasn't formally involved in the regime's crimes. In denazification hearings in 1948, no repercussions followed. He was lucky that he wasn't as prominent as someone like Flip or Krupp. Scholstek, referring to the German industrialists, Friedrich Flick and Alfred Krupp, were sentenced to prison terms at the Nuremberg war crimes trials. Günter died in 1954 while vacationing in Cairo, leaving his business empire equally in the hands of his two surviving sons, Harold and Herbert. Most notably, the assets including ownership of the AFA and Deutsche Waffen and Munition Fabriken, renamed Industry Werk Karlsruhe, AG after the war, and stakes in Daimler-Benz and potash miner Wintershall. Herbert managed his stakes in the battery car and potash firm, while Harold oversaw the interest in the industrial companies. Over the next decade, the brothers increased their stakes at Daimler. Herbert saves BMW from collapse in the 60s after becoming its largest shareholder and backing the development of new models. Harold died in 1967 at age 45 in an airplane crash. Outside Turin, Italy, the relationship between his widow, Inge, and Herbert deteriorated after his death. Negotiations to settle the estate by separating assets commenced in 1970. The most valuable asset that the Harold Quandt heirs received was 4/5 of the 14% stake in Daimler. According to the biography, in 1974, the entire stake was sold to the Kuwait Investment Authority, the country's sovereign wealth fund, for about 1 billion Deutschmarks, according to Daimler-Benz publication from 1986, celebrating its centennial. Inge Quandt, who suffered from depression, died of a heart attack on Christmas Eve in 1978, her new husband, Dr. Hans Hillmann von Hallam, shot himself in the head on Boxing Day. The five orphan daughters, two of them teenagers, were left to split the family fortune. Oh, that sounded good. The estate's trustees had started overseeing the daughter's money in 1974, an active investment approach commenced with the founding of the family's investment company in 1981. It's different if you work for a family than a corporation, said Becker. You can really invest instead of fulfilling regulation requirements. The siblings try to get together a few times a year to discuss their investments and after earning a master's degree in business administration in Seed in Fontainebleau, France, she married German. Germany publishing heir Florian Langenscheidt, with whom she had two sons. God, he's just keep it in the family. The couple divorced in 2008. Katharina Geller-Herr owns Gestut Walderhausen, an equestrian center in Hamburg, Germany. She sponsors Lars Nieberg, a two-time Olympic gold medalist in show jumping.
Me, but also you. The Pharaoh fast-forwards his favorite foreign film, Powder Donut. Okay, what's my line?
The only line I see here on the script is get options based on your budget with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive.
Oh, man, that's a tongue twister, huh? I'm sorry, I'm going to need a few more minutes. Bulbous Walrus, the Bulbous Walrus.
The Name Your Price tool, only from Progressive.
The owl ran afoul of the comatose coxswain.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When it comes to making coffee, some people make a single cup, others an entire pot. At Community Coffee, we make our coffee with a commitment. Not just to you, the drinker, but to those who grew it a continent away and process here in our own backyard. As a family-owned, community-driven company, we take great pride in what we make and how we make it. Find Community Coffee at your local grocery store or visit communitycoffee.com to order some today.